You're listening to 99.1 WQRT LP Indianapolis, and this is Create Here. Produced by artists and curators from Big Car Collaborative, Create Here is your place to listen to conversations with people making intriguing, innovative, and impactful things happen on the cultural front in Indianapolis, Indiana, and beyond. Find out more and access additional episodes at WQRT.org.
Hello, this is Shate Marsh, Big Car co-founder and director of programming and exhibitions, and I'm here today with artist Jenny Del Fuego. Jenny is a Chicago-born artist and lives in Indianapolis. She perpetually searches for the phrase through material, sound, words, and movement at her Sobro studio. Contact Jenny at www.jennydelfuego.com to collaborate or schedule a studio visit. But thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure to be here.
So, are you still doing a residency with the Indie Dance Movement Collective? Are you currently in the midst of that right now?
I am. It is wrapping up at the end of this month.
Yeah. And what, how long have you been working as an artist? In Indianapolis? Or just overall?
Overall?
Yeah.
Over 20 years.
Yeah.
Yep.
And what did you, tell us a bit about starting out as an artist. Like how did you decide you were going to be an artist?
Well, I came from Bloomington and I got my undergrad in painting. And my first gig here was as a scenic designer over all around town. I think the Civic Theater when it was in the IMA and just a couple others, including IRT.
And were you making work for yourself, like your personal practice at that time or as well?
I was oil painting big time in those days.
What was that work like at that point? Was it more figurative? What were you making work of at that time?
Kind of really what I was still doing in undergrad. I was drawing from life at the Art Center. I was helping schedule the models there and sitting in on that as well. And then I was painting at home and drawing. So I was really into charcoal and doing landscapes. It was really seascapes at the time.
Mm-hmm. And why seascapes being in landlocked? Tell us, landlocked Indiana.
That's a good question. I started probably my third year, and it kind of just happened. I have this habit of working through the night, and I was working on a canvas for several months, and it's actually down in the basement. and I flipped it backwards, like a 4-foot by 5-foot canvas. It's backwards here at Tube Space. But it was something which came naturally. I abandoned everything I'd been working on for months, and I just went with what I was feeling at the time. And it just happened, and that's where that tumultuous seascape happened. It was about a relationship.
Ooh. As is a lot of great art, right?
It was a decisive moment.
So that piece you've carried with you through over the 20 years that you've been working as an artist. Why? A lot of artists I know when their first pieces where they end up or getting rid of. Why did you hold on to that piece?
I actually painted a whole bunch of other ones in that vein. But that one I hung on to because it was special to me. And it actually helped me to decide to choose the path of staying with my partner. And he's been my collaborator and for decades now.
Mm-hmm. And how do you collaborate with your partner?
He supports me and I support him, and we give each other space. So he's a musician with a brilliant brain, and mm-hmm. we, whatever needs to happen. So he's actually gotten stitches from installs for my work.
Aww.
yeah, he got cut on one of my sculptures. It was steel. It went through his knee. And I've had canvases fall on his head. But he really, the hustle of getting a show together and putting stuff out there. And then also, he's not a wing clipper, which is an amazing thing.
Yeah.
And we understand each other's process. So if I need space, he gives me space, and vice versa. If we need support, and I don't even have time, I don't remember to eat, or vice versa, mm-hmm. we do that for each other.
Oh, so do you give... So that piece you've held on to, and that is, do you consider it a piece of your relationship and like a symbol of it in a way, or not? Or
for a while I did. Mm-hmm. I haven't even really looked at it in a while. Mm-hmm. It was just literally taking up space in my studio, because I'm not attached. I don't have the same feelings with it, because mm-hmm. There's just an understanding between the two of us, and it actually is tumultuous. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel that in the relationship.
Right. You were saying that he had punctured his knee with one of your sculptures. Talk a little bit about moving from painting into sculpture. How did that happen? And those new materials that you started working with?
Yeah, I guess I stopped painting for a couple of years, probably around 2008. And I just didn't feel like painting anymore. Mm-hmm. I lost my mojo. There were some life transitions. But also, I'd been painting for a while, so I was questioning, why am I still doing this? And I hadn't found... something that meant something to me through the paint anymore. Like the newness of loving the feel of it had dissipated, because mm-hmm. it'd been a decade or so, more so. So the objects kind of came because that's something that's always kind of been there, but I didn't focus on it as much. I don't know, I just kind of am constantly fussing with things around me. Mm-hmm. And I guess it just naturally happened because I wasn't painting. Mm-hmm.
Were you not making any work for 2 years? Like a 2 year, you said around 2 years at that point.
Painting-wise,
you were making other work.
I switched mediums, really. Mm-hmm. I write, so I went to writing, and I make music. Mm-hmm. I'm not like my husband, but I write, and so I have a big stash of words and scribbles in spiral notebooks.
And that brings me to one of your pieces down there, poem. Mm-hmm. And it's not everybody sees the words, but some people do. And they're, you know, so far when we've had visitors, and they'll be like, I think that, you know, they're like, I think that's the word, you know, this or that, you know. So it's interesting how some people really connect with your work and are able to see the words in that piece in particular. Will you talk a little bit about making poem?
Poem came out of frustration also. It's really funny. I think you have to be doing the work. Because it was unpremeditated. It was not premeditated. I just had a couple week stretch of trying to figure out what I was going to show and create for this. And I didn't like everything I was doing. So I had this roll of paper and I just rolled it across the floor. And just grabbed the first paint I could and just started writing this poem that has been in my mind for a while. And it's not my poem. Mm-hmm. It's someone else's poem.
Do you think, of your work do you think is born of frustration? Because we've talked a little bit about the painting that's in the Wonder Camera piece, and then this poem piece, you're like, did, you know, do you think it's a way, because there's also like a playfulness to your work as well. So it's just like, can you talk about that balance of playfulness and rage in a way?
There is a tension. There really
is. Yeah, there is.
I mean, I don't know if it's a pressure cooker thing, but it's definitely, I've had to play since I was little. It's one of those, I would always be staring out the window in the classroom. But the frustration, I was a middle child, and I was also I was the first son in the family. I was the second daughter, so I was kind of the first son. And there was a frustration of not being a dude. Because the guys got to play the way I like to play. Mm-hmm. They get to strip their shirt off when it's hot, you know? And I was like, when I was a kid, it was totally, why can't we do that too? But the frustration, all my work isn't about frustration. It just seems like the ones that when I kind of hit the nail on the head when I'm frustrated, mm-hmm. and it's not really when I'm trying is when it happens. I mean, I'm working, mm-hmm. but I'm not striving to make it happen and force my hand.
So it's just coming out like it's a natural just flow of things. It's what needs to happen for you.
I think so. To some degree, yes, it is. It's an urge. Yeah. But I also want things. I want to enjoy it because that's the goal. I want to love what I do. Mm-hmm. And so that's the frustration. I did have a professor ask me one time, do you enjoy this? Do you enjoy painting? Because in that moment, I was really working through a problem mm-hmm. personally. But I do. I enjoy, like, It's a compulsion. I have to do it because it's kind of like breathing and walking.
The Wonder Camera piece, you know, you took that out of your home. You live with that, and you were talking about how that's your space, like a creative space for you, and that you are, which I just think is a real gift to the audience that you would share that. But can you tell us a bit about the Wonder Camera piece and describe it a bit for the listeners? And you had I loved how you told, I'll let you, I'm not going to ruin it because how you described it.
I remember because it was, so the Wonder Camera piece I have renamed as Shattering the Hourglass. And it's essentially the desk that I have at home, which has, it's an old sewing desk. I don't sew. And it has four cubbies, which are repurposed CD racks. And I've filled them with things that I love that were given to me and things that I've gathered. And within all those cubbies, I mean, it's like a wunder, my Wunderkammer. It has everything that delights me. Different things from nature, ceramics, toys, and I feel the thing that it was vulnerable for me to put it in there because I still kind of feel it. I feel a little silly having it out there. I feel it exposed because it feels like having my underwear drawer out there.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I left some poems in there. I have some photos. And the purpose of it at home, beyond decor, because it's not just, ooh, here's something I picked up at a design store. It is beyond decor. It's my relationship with objects. And what is the conversation that it stirs in my head? How does it make me feel? And so it is. It's kind of a jumping point for me where I see something in passing off out of the corner of my eye, or I'm making something. I was like, oh, that's where that marker is over there. Oh, that pencil's there. It's like muscle memory to some degree.
I always like to watch people interact with the work of artists, and you know, a lot of people would come over to your piece and they would say, "Oh, I recognize that," or I have this little, you know, they would, it brought them so much joy. And there is just such an interesting experience, your work, because it is like there's this playfulness, there's this vulnerability, and then there's also these undercurrents of, you know, like frustration that you're talking about. I really just have seen people really connect with your work, and I enjoyed it. I remember when I first started seeing you, you had sent photos of you were outlining in chalk the light and the movement of the light on the sidewalk. Where do those sort of ideas come from for your, were you like, and how did you decide to do like this temporary project that maybe people will come, temporary work that maybe people will come across or not, and then, but you're documenting it still, right?
I am. It has been a practice for at least 5 or 6 years. And upon first glance, there's sidewalk chalk. Someone drew on a driveway or somewhere. And here again, it was something that was born out of feeling like my hands were tied and I didn't have power in situations. And like sometimes you just want to wave a magic wand and make everything right in the world, and then you know you can't. So that in particular, it didn't start off as chalk. It started as drawing in, like sitting in my secret garden. Mm-hmm. And there are these shadows that were being cast on my notebook, and I couldn't write, and usually writing is a breeze, like the words usually flow, and I can just go with it. But I just was frozen. So all I can do is look at the shadows moving on my page, on the sketchbook. And so I just started tracing the moving shadows. And that was enough for me in that moment. I couldn't have words, but, and my loved ones, I had loved ones who were in institutions. They were sick at the time. So I was enjoying being outside. When they couldn't, and then I shared those things with them. And then it turned into chalk. And then it turned into like, I only have 5 minutes or 10 minutes, so I'm gonna go and do this right now. And it just keeps building on each other.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, there's, it's also interesting to think about your work in that it's precious work, but it's not necessarily, like you're not trying to sell it a lot of times, or you know, it's not how people think of art, like I'm gonna buy a painting and this needs to be treated this way. I remember when we went to go pick up your work, you're like, just put it in the van. And I was like, okay,
you know, wouldn't have
if
been
you
okay.
Say so.
Yeah, that's very different from several years ago.
Yeah,
I mean, I trained classically, so
yeah.
And I also worked at an art supply store and knew all the archival and all that good stuff, ways of creating and putting things away. But it stopped at my interest. I lost interest in that.
Yeah, but it's still really, it's just as meaningful and important, but you're not treating the object that way or creating an object that same way anymore, it seems. And what made you want to move away from that?
I think I was questioning, why do I make stuff? And what is it doing sitting on a wall? Like, I want my work to have, well, A, it has to be important to me. And I hope that if I'm connecting with it, it's something that someone else can. And art has changed my life and the way I interact with the world. So I want to do stuff that'll help engage in meaningful ways. And I think that's why I do the chalk and other things, because I think even though some of it, even though it is abstract, it's accessible. Like the materials being not so precious, Like, I know a kid who wants to do oil paints, but that's the barrier to entry for oil paint is so much versus, hey, let's go draw with chalk.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you want to move away from the idea that art is for the elite, that art is for, I mean, there's still art that's just for that group of people, but I mean, one thing I'm personally tired of is people associating contemporary art that way, and there's a time and place for it, but...
Well, to address, I acknowledge the hierarchy, and there is a barrier to entry. I mean, or just, I do want to help break down barriers, because access is really important to me. I had nobody show me when I was little, except for postcards I'd get in the mail from my auntie, that art is more, that art can be something that's pertinent. Because that's just for museums. And I didn't even go to a museum till after high school. So the museum for me growing up was the graffiti and the murals. I could go all around with that. but I do. I think there's a really important thing. I think there would be more killer art if it wasn't so elite. And as far as applying for things, I mean, it's a hard thing to choose an artist's life, because if that's what you choose and you're going to get funding, because it's really hard to have sustenance without a normal job, a 9-to-5. And even though when, as an artist, you have your whole life experience and it's like that gets poured into it on top of, I obsess over this idea and object, and like sometimes it's spontaneous, but it's just constant work. But on top of the creation process and thinking, you have to do like apply for grants and be a writer, and that's the one thing that people don't realize. It's like you have to be a writer,
and market yourself.
Yeah, and do all that.
A lot of work.
And I've actually been okay going at my own pace in my own way. Could I do things differently? Yes, but there is freedom, and I don't mind having a side gig. Mm-hmm. I don't have a side hustle. Or no, I do have a side hustle. Duh. So, 'cause I do. I want a studio space, and I want, there are things that I need, but that was just really hard to sustain. Is hard to sustain as a contractor.
And then this show, you talk about your Lola. And it's a personal story, and can you tell our audience a bit about that and the eggshells, and you know, just some of the you know, why you decided to use certain materials and sharing this about your Lola?
Okay, my Lola is my grandma, and. You know, when you think about the person in your life who is just nurtured you, she wasn't like this warm, fuzzy person, but she was a constant. And I was able to be there in the sunset of her life, and when Alzheimer's set in, and she went blind. So it was interesting because she would flit in and out of different decades. She was in the 50s, I got to hear about the time when she was had to hide because there were fighter planes, and I got to ask her what the bunker looked like and what was in the bunker. But the cool thing about that is that...
And what war was that?
In the Philippines.
Okay.
In the Philippines.
Okay.
So, but really what was cool about that time when she had no tether to I'm in this day and age is that she was just walking in literally in the darkness in her blindness, and she would just say things out loud. She was very religious, so she'd be praying, but I mean even just her everyday thoughts were just poetic. and I jotted some of them down somewhere and I can't find them, but I never knew that about her until she lost that grasp on, I shouldn't be saying this out loud or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Was this when you were still in Chicago? Was she living with your family or what at that point?
Yeah.
And
I was, I just went home. I like left home at 17, and that was the one summer I went back and stayed with in my family home just to be with her that one summer. So I don't know. That was like my third year of college as well.
You know, it says here you used eggshell and ash are ground and used as pigment and texture. Is there any, like, what made you, were you like, I'm going to take eggshells? And is there a reason why you decided to, or was it just there and you were like, yes, here, I have this idea?
I have so many different things that I do. I just happen to be one who loves breakfast, so I have all these eggs that I actually hang on to after I cook. But really, I think the egg is beautiful as a whole, and it's a whole thing. It is nourishing, it is tough, and to me it symbolizes life and fragility. Yeah, that's... So I actually grind them by hand, mm-hmm. and there's this connection I have that just helps me, for me personally, just live a decent life, live my days, because I don't know how long they're going to be here. So that's what it is. It's impermanence to me.
When has the idea of, you know, impermanence and your like life being uncertain, has that always been center of your mind, or is it a newer thing? I'm just asking because you know, yeah. I've always been morbid. I'm just seeing if other people were
too. No, it has literally, like I say impermanence because truly the fact of the matter is it's all about life and death.
Right.
It really is. But yeah. I mean, people are like, oh, that's about grief? I mean, I have a URL about grief. I have like so many volumes on different things. But yeah, it's a theme I have been exploring since I was a teenager. Like, for real. So that's, here it goes. Enough coffee for you. Yeah. And it is. We have a little bit of time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's what I really love about your work is that it's really, when you first look at it, you're like, oh, this looks fun and playful. And then you start looking at it and you're like, oh, that might be kind of sad or you know, something else is going on beneath that. But I think that it's important. It's nuanced, just like people are. So you also, when did you start doing movement as part? I think you talked a little bit about it in person before, or it was in our interview with Lauren, but if you could talk about, you know, taking movement of your body and integrating it into your practice as an artist.
Okay. I've actually been a mover, like all of us, since the beginning. There's actually pictures from when I was 4 years old, and I remember tapping into that feeling. I was getting that little dopamine and serotonin hit when I was little. There was no music, but I'm dancing. And I get that feeling. So it is pleasure. It's pleasure when I'm creating, because that happens no matter if it's moving or visual stuff. I guess moving is something, though. I mean, brain-wise, it affects our mind and our thoughts. So much so. And I love to dance.
Walk me through like just a day with you, like when you're going to make art and spend it doing that.
Okay.
Do you have a routine or not?
I need to have coffee. I have the whole French press ritual. I need to wear my pajamas for a while and be completely disheveled. I can't hear the news till after I have my coffee. and then the eggs happen, and I'm a sucker for Toad in the Hole, her eggs in a basket. And really, that's kind of where it comes from a lot, the eggs. And then I write in the morning and scribble And then side hustle stuff, it's a family business, so address that. And I usually get a couple hours in the afternoon after lunch. And then sometimes, if I'm lucky, I go at night.
Mm-hmm. I'm asking that too because during the opening, you steamed rice.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about during your install of your show with us, you know, you were like, I want people to smell the jasmine rice. Mm-hmm. You know, so really providing this smell and making us think of taste, you know, putting that into the exhibit as well. I'm really looking forward to having everything together, you know, because I really do feel it will be like this all senses. And that's it seems like you're just all into, you're putting everything in to the work.
I think everything I do is partial self-portrait, and I really tried to pour home, like a sense of home, into the work. And so the installation, I see it with the cubbies on the Wunderkammer, and even when you walk right down the stairs, that's willow trees, branches from my front door. Like if you're on my porch, you get welcomed by the willow, and I have a relationship with the willow. There's a whole other series with the willow.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk into my house and you're gonna get slammed in the face with the steam of rice. So that's home. That's what I grew up with. That's what I tried to bring into the space.
And there were some, you know, the other piece of your work too, is that it seems, and is this a newer thing, or have you always basically come into a space and also are like collaborating with the space itself? Because, you know, you found the cubby holes in the gallery, you had an idea for, and it didn't end up happening, but the sculptures and the cracks in the wall. Yeah, it's been fun to see like how you work and how you collaborate with just the space itself.
I think there's always a conversation to be had with architecture. So, I don't know, I loved playing hide and seek. So I'd always notice just a sliver of something here and there. So that's why the cubbies underneath, or the triangle underneath the stairs, mm-hmm. got the things, but the willow. I just, that wasn't all pre-med. I mean, I don't like to create until I see the space.
Mm-hmm. And did, has that always been like part of your work lately? Like we're interacting with the space itself?
I think so. I mean, I moved every single year of my life in college. It was a little extended for undergrad. Some people go to school for this long and become doctors. I got my undergrad. I find pleasure in making a space where it gives me surprise and delight. Or I was like, oh yeah, I guess I can have a conversation with a room through objects.
That's perfect. I don't know what to say to top that, Jenny. I feel, and I think a lot of people feel, there's an energy with that piece. Like even if you don't know the poem, like I said, some people are attracted to it and are like, can really like it. Really, they go stand in front of it for a while and feel it. So sometimes I almost feel like it's like listening to a language that might be a foreign language, but you kind of understand what they're saying, like the gist of it, or how they're feeling. That's how I feel about that piece in some of your work. So, and I think that's an art, like sometimes I feel like that's the purpose of art, and then my role is almost like a translator or protector or whatever the artist needs. I just really am grateful to hold your work in our space, and I really thank you.
Thank you. It's been fun to be here, and I love being able to see it in that space. It's been a fun process.
Well, thank you for joining us today. You can reach Jenny Del Fuego at www.jennydelfuego.com.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.